Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. Hour number 3, live in Los Angeles. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, Fox Sports Radio, iHeartRadio, and FS1. Good stuff. First 2 hours flew by. Howie Long, Trent Dilfer, Peter King in a Monday. We're doing this in a radio studio for the next few days. Abundance of caution. I was on a Sunday football show for Fox. Somebody had tested positive, so I've taken 3 or 4 tests since then, all negative, but can't go back into the building for a week or two, so we'll see what happens. Abundance of caution. Joy Taylor is joining me, and Joy, how are you this morning on a Monday? Show is flying by.
I'm doing good. It is flying by. I'm looking forward to tonight. It's a big, big weekend of football, and really looking forward to the Thursday games as well. Some good ones.
So, you know, it's so funny because everything in sports is to avoid dynasties. You know, if you look in pro sports, if you're number one, you draft last in the first round. But the reality is there's just 5% of America is either smarter, works harder, better funded, has geographical or revenue advantages. And there's dynasties in every business. Retail, our whole government doesn't want a dynasty. Amazon owns retail. 3 or 4 companies, Google, Facebook, Microsoft, own tech. Dynasties happen. You can't avoid them. And it's just the reality of it. That when the Lakers get rolling, it's a more appealing brand. And this weekend, I think LeBron James now is the deepest team he's ever been on. The Lakers went out and stole Montrezl Harrell from the Clippers, a sixth man of the year. Dennis Schroeder, second place sixth man of the year. Mark Gasol, a Morris twin, is back. Right now, the Lakers today go 9 deep. They could actually start a game without LeBron and win. They could start AD, Wes Matthews, KCP, Dennis Schroeder, Montrezl Harrell, and bring Mark Gasol, Kyle Kuzma, Alex Caruso off the bench. They could win a game. I'm not saying they'd be a big playoff team. They could win games without LeBron. This is the best, deepest roster he's ever had. Miami had 3 stars, but no size and shaky at point guard. This team's got everything. Schroeder can give you 18 points a game, 27-year-old starting the team. You've got Mark Gasol and AD are both big, excellent post, low post defenders. Gasol's also a great passer. LeBron's the best player in the game. AD could be the second or third best players. You've got star power. KCP had a very good bubble playoff. They are loaded. They got younger. They got deeper. They got less crazy. Rondo and Dwight Howard are out. They're shoot the ball better this year. And I look at it this morning and I'm like, I don't think LeBron's ever had 8 other guys on a team. I don't know if he trusts Kuzma, but Gasol, Montrezl Harrell, AD, Wes Matthews has hit playoff shots. Like, it's a real basketball team. And once again, the Lakers look like they're defending champs, and they are stacked. They are stacked. So, unbelievable weekend for the Lakers. And it's, you know, the Dodgers just won the World Series. They've won their division 7 straight years. They went and got Mookie. Who's dominating college football? Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson. Notre Dame's real good. You know, it's like if you look at tennis, we've had men's dynasties. Serena was a woman's dynasty. It's the same 4 or 5 great international soccer teams. It doesn't matter if it's retail, it's tech, it's sports. You're always trying to avoid, you know, unfair playing field. Same team. You look at Kansas City right now. They're not going anywhere for 10 years. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, good luck. You know, if you get the right people, you put them together, there's just a finite number of people who are truly great at their job. Right now, the Chiefs have several. And what a weekend for the Lakers. I mean, that is they are stacked. My other thought from the weekend was, my wife uses this saying sometimes. She'll say, I'd rather adjust to your absence than be frustrated with your presence. She told me that line the other night. We were just talking about sometimes if you're in a company situation and you just somebody doesn't work, and she's like, you're better off being adjusting to their absence than being driven crazy by their presence. And this is why Carson Palmer years ago for the Cincinnati Bengals said, I'm going to retire if you don't trade me. I'd rather adjust to life without football than be annoyed being a member of the Bengals. Trade me or I'm retiring with years left. And that was Carson Palmer's ultimatum. I'm just not going to do this. I'd rather adjust to a life without football than deal with this nonsense. And that's why I said with Joe Burrow, I said, be very careful. I never forget when he got drafted and they took a shot of his family. I'm like, he doesn't look that happy. It's the Cincinnati Bengals. It is not a coincidence. The Browns, the Lions, and the Bengals have been a train wreck for 20 years. It's not a coincidence. Not great owners, owners that won't pay for elite front offices, they don't have them, so they don't find the elite coaches. The best people in the NFL want to work with the best people, right? Like, the best people want to work with the best people. And so you get these franchises that nobody's going to take. No really high-end football coach is going to take the Bengals' job. Why would you? They don't pay. They won't pay for a top GM. If I'm a coach, you get a Zach Taylor. You're not getting a Sean McVay. Sean McVay had options. You get a Zach Taylor. It's not like people were lining up for Zach Taylor. And that's what you get with these, like the Lions. What elite coach is going to go, if Urban Meyer was on the market, you're going to tell me Cincinnati and Detroit get the first call or the Jets? And so I always say this, in the NFL, be very careful about firing your coach and turning over, because it turns off people. Great coaches want stability. And if you're constantly firing coaches, I mean, nothing against Kevin Stefanski, but it's not like he's an A-plus candidate for a coach. He may work. Same with Zach Taylor, Matt Patricia. You kind of get what you get. So I watched him this weekend, and I like a lot of these young quarterbacks. Tua's look good. Herbert's look good. Josh Allen's look good. Kyler Murray's look great. Joe Burrow looks good. But the one I worry about is Joe Burrow. That's what I worry about. Because Cincinnati has no history of supporting a great young quarterback. Prove it to me. Carson Palmer was the last great one you had, and he wanted out. By the way, Joe Burrow, latest from Adam Schefter. The MRI to Joe Burrow revealed more damage than anticipated. He tore his ACL. He tore his MCL. And suffered other structural issues in his knee as well. You go to a better team, you get a better coach, you get a better O-line. This is there's just four or five teams in the NFL. You get a B-minus coach, you get a C-plus GM. Again, the best scouts in the league, they don't want to work for the Lions, they don't want to work for the Bengals, they don't want to work for the Jags. And so it's just, that's why I say in the NFL, who's your owner? Who's your owner? That'll dictate everything. You got a good owner, he'll get a good GM, and the GM will have, hey, look at my owner. We have stability. I mean, it's no shock that Andy Reid gets fired in Philadelphia. Where does Andy Reid go? Andy Reid had $20 million in the bank. Where does he go? He goes to Kansas City. The Hunt family's excellent. Brett Veach. Like, Kansas City has a history of not winning a bunch of Super Bowls, but being stable, of being a stable franchise. So I look at Joe Burrow, and the news is lousy this morning, and it's like, this is what we worried about. Bengal nonsense. This is what we worried about. I don't worry about Tua getting benched. I don't worry about Justin Herbert. Most of these young guys, I don't worry about Kyler Murray. Cincinnati, I told this story last week, years ago, a local high school football team, Mulder High School in Cincinnati, had an indoor facility. The Bengals didn't. Man, T.J. Hushmanzada has come on this show before and said he got there, they shared jock straps. That's what they did. They shared jock straps. They didn't have Gatorade. You had to just find water fountains. I mean, that's the organization's history. So I said, if I'm Joe Burrow, I would have pushed back. Eli Manning pushed back. Elway pushed back, and they were both rewarded. Sad. Tore ACL, MCL, brutal. I actually DM'd him last night, Joe Burrow. Made me sick to watch him. It just made me sick to my stomach. And again, it's not like second guessing. This is like first preaching. Everybody knew it was. I mean, we're all saying it. This is brutal. It's going to be Andrew Luck. Give him the playbook. Save us. Brutal. Just ridiculous. Trent Dilfer. Oh, my God. Did he deliver a bombshell in the second hour? We'll revisit that coming up.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
RecTech Grills with a Q.com, built by grillers for grillers, RECTEQ.com. Oh, man. Los Angeles County is shutting restaurants Wednesday at 10. Our heartfelt hopes and fingers crossed for all the restaurateurs in this amazing city. I don't know how you're going to do it. Will there be there to support you? I'll be buying takeout every night for the next 3 weeks minimum. Tony Gonzalez, the Hall of Fame. You know, for only tight end ever in the history of football that was elected into the Hall of Fame on his first try. That's never happened before. That's interesting. Tony Gonzalez now joining us. By the way, when you were a kid, tight ends were not nearly as cool. Who was the best tight end in the NFL when you were at Cal or you were in high school?
Well, I think the guy that I looked to was Keith Jackson. Remember him?
Yeah.
Billy? Yeah, he was my guy that I looked up to. I used to watch all his games. And then when I got into the league, I started looking at Kellen Winslow Tate. Because he's a little bit before my time. I was born in 1976. He was in the early 80s. But yeah, Keith Jackson was my guy. He was the one who I really looked up to.
Why did you choose football over basketball? Because you played you were a good basketball player.
Well, I don't think I chose. It chose me. I wasn't good enough to be a basketball player. I was good, but I mean, I couldn't. Football, they were like, hey, you'll be a first round draft choice. Basketball, I don't know, kid. Maybe you'll make a team. But you'll be floating around the league. So I kind of was just one of those things. I loved them. You know, I loved basketball a little bit more. I like football a lot, but it was like, hey, for your future, if you really want to have a chance to do something great, you've got to go play football. So it was kind of like an easy decision, actually.
So the Steelers have the defense, the Chiefs have the offense, but both are good on the other side of the ball. If the Steelers play the Chiefs today, who would you like and why?
Oh God, that's the great matchup, right? That's what we hopefully we see in the AFC Championship game as of right now. But I would say I'm gonna go with the Chiefs, and not because I played for them. I mean, right now the way Patrick Mahomes is playing, no matter what happens, it seems like they are always in a position. It's like when they got the ball last night, you just knew they were gonna go down there and score. It was way too much time with that offense. He's in such command of it, and Andy Reid is in such command of calling plays right now. It's so much fun to watch, but I just, that's what scares me about this Chiefs team right now. It seems like they're in the same position they've been in the last 2 years. And, you know, 2 years ago when he won MVP, Patrick Mahomes, they lost in the playoffs because they couldn't stop anybody in the AFC Championship game. And then last year, the defense kind of started to figure it out and played well enough. And hopefully that's what happens now, but I really like Pittsburgh. That defense looks great, but I don't think anybody right now can stop the Kansas City Chiefs on offense. They're the best offense in the league.
Yeah. You know, you were lucky. First of all, you played for Atlanta. They were smartly owned and smartly run. And though you didn't win championships in Kansas City, historically it's been a well-run organization. You know, so I think you've done better than most in terms of your coaches, your quarterbacks, your owners, your GMs. But I look at Joe Burrow and I say to myself, I feel bad for that kid because, let's be honest, if you would have gone to Jacksonville, there are places, Tony, you could have gone and you would have been a decent player, but we would have never talked about you because you wouldn't have had like a Matt Ryan to get you the ball. Like, did you ever have friends in the NFL that played for lousy organizations and – what was it like for them? Did you have friends like that?
I don't know about friends. I remember, I'm blanking on his name. He played at Hardy Nickerson. I'm sorry. Yeah. Hardy Nickerson. So he's a great example of that guy who's just so underrated at the linebacker position. One of the best to ever play. But most people haven't heard of him because he played for an organization that wasn't good at the time. And that always kind of scared me a little bit that maybe – and Kansas City, we were always good. We were never great, but we were always pretty good. So
yeah.
I was able to stay on the radar of a lot of people. But Yeah, those type of players, I look at them all the time, and I know a lot of people don't like it, but when you rock the boat a little bit, when you say, hey, I'm tired of losing, we need to get out of here, that's when you get traded. If you play good guy and you keep your mouth shut and you keep your head down and you try to say all the right things, the team's just going to keep you. I don't know if I'm making sense here, but this is what makes squeaky wheel gets the oil. So those type of players and those organizations, it's kind of like what happened with Eli Manning when he was like, I'm not going to go to San Diego. I'm going to go to the Giants, and I'm going to go win two Super Bowls. Is what happened? It was like the best decision ever. It's unpopular at the time, and people can frown upon it. But those type of organizations, it is what it is. You got to get out of there, or they better do something drastic to prove that they're going to go the right direction. Otherwise, I say you try to get out of there.
Yeah, I mean, do you regret not being more outspoken early in your career because the Chiefs were having quarterback issues?
I don't know if I regret it, but I guess I kind of do. It is what it is. But I did finally figure it out because I asked for that trade in Kansas City towards the end of my career. And the only reason I did that, because I really did only think I had 2 years left. And I was like, I cannot do this anymore. I'd rather retire than keep losing, because because my window's closing. And I finally stood up and spoke out and said, hey, I want out of here. And of course, the backlash came, where Kansas City, still to this day, there's people in Kansas City that don't understand that. And they don't like that. They don't like me because I asked to leave. But you have to do that. You have to think somewhat selfishly when it comes to your career, because next thing you know, you could be like, oh, well, damn, I spent my whole career and I never had a chance to go out there and do something great.
Yeah.
But people get mad at players, though, for that. They get mad at T.O. or they get mad at these players that are outspoken. But in the end, those players, they do get traded and they do end up on good teams. And it seems like it works out half the time for these players that are loud, so to speak.
Yeah, Tony Gonzalez, the Hall of Famer. So I was watching one of the games I got right. Doesn't happen very often. I picked the Colts to beat the Packers, and the reason I picked it is because I thought the game would be ugly, and in the second half, just the Colts literally were a different team. They just 14-play drive, 10-play drive, 8-play drive. And it's funny, Tony, you got to take me here. You only have 15 minutes halftime, and you probably get about 7 to talk. How can the Colts spend all week in a game plan, not play well for a first half, talk for 7 minutes, and then totally change their identity? What the hell happens at halftime in 7 minutes? Take me to your career. Did you ever go in at halftime, getting your butt kicked, you'd make a little adjustment, and you're literally dominant for the next hour and a half?
Yeah, I honestly, it's such a hard question to answer. Because it happens so many times, you know. Because I don't know if it's the fire and brim speech because that happens periodically, where the coach will come in and just tear your butt apart, the team apart, saying you're playing like crap, you're not being physical, you're missing your assignments, you're dropping, and then the team will go out there and turn it around. But I've also been chewed out at halftime. We go out there and we play even worse. But I do think that's where the really good coaching comes in. That's where Bill Belichick shines. Andy Reid shines. It seems like they're going to go into halftime and make that adjustment and be like, okay, this is where we keep consistently getting beat, and let's address it. But there's also a spiritual shift, a soul shift at halftime that can happen too as well. And that comes from the players, the leadership, to go, hey, guys, we're not playing but like worth a damn right now. What the hell's going on? Let's go out there and turn it on this second half and get back in this game. And you know, that's probably what happened with the Colts, because that was two different teams from one half to the next.
Yeah. So players often talk amongst themselves, but they don't talk to ownership or GM. Do you think if you really sat down with Carson Wentz and said, dude, off the record, like a teammate, do you think he's probably wants out of Philadelphia? The papers are killing him. The talk shows are killing him. The Nick Foles statue. He lost Frank Reich, his coach. Like, I look at Carson Wentz right now, and he's lost. And I think he's talented. Sam Darnold's talented. That's not working. Do you think Carson Wentz deep down knows it's not going to work in Philadelphia? Or do you think he's still buying into everything, crossing his fingers, hoping it does?
Well, if he's if he's buying into everything and just going blindly, hey, it's going to work out, it's going to be great, that's that attitude that I believe you can't have. You have to question the direction of your franchise. Okay, what are we doing? And what's realistic? And how much time do I have left? Can I be part of a rebuild? Do I want to be part of that rebuild? Or do I just want that fresh start? You have to ask those type of questions constantly. Otherwise, you take the risk of just descending into mediocrity and to a career that you look back and go, damn, what the hell happened? I look back at my decision. I loved my time in Kansas City. I loved it. I loved the people. I did not want to leave. But at the same time, it was at that point, like, I don't know how much time I have left. I don't know if this I don't believe the franchise is going in the right direction with the hires that they just made. And it turned out I was right. I'd been around long enough at that point. I knew what would make a good team or a bad team. And I had that hunch, and I turned out to be right. And I'm glad I was able to get out of there. But it didn't take away from the love I had of Kansas City. And looking at Carson Wentz, he's got to ask himself those questions. He's got to be honest with himself and go, is this the best position for me and the team? I mean, I don't want to stay here and be mediocre, and I'm sure the team doesn't want me to stay here and be mediocre. Maybe they need a fresh start, too. I mean, it's not a totally selfish thought for him to ask that maybe I just need to get out of here. Maybe I need to get the hell out of here and get a fresh start, and they'll be better for it, and I'll be better for it, and we both can win.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. In New Orleans this weekend, there was a story that some of the players thought Jameis Winston should have started. And Sean Payton's like, no, I'm gonna start Taysom Hill. And Taysom played very well, and he's very quirky. He's like a better version of Tebow. He's a better athlete. He throws better. But Tebow won 7 straight games until people saw enough film on him and saw, okay, this is what he can't do. It's like Kaepernick. Once you saw a film on Kaepernick, you can figure him out a little bit. But that the element of surprise, unique, works. And Taysom's Kaepernick, Tebow, it's very unique. Nobody else played the position like that. Were you ever... It's funny that any player would second-guess Sean Payton, but players tend to think they know as much as coaches. Are you surprised he went with Taysom Hill? And did you ever doubt a coaching decision before a big game?
Yeah, of course. Of course you doubt the you look at it. I mean, we've all been around. We've been playing this game a long time, and you have your opinions, and you say, okay, well, I've seen what this guy does in practice, and do you really think this is going to work? I'm with Sean Payton for going. First of all, you paid him. I don't think he had any choice. You have to start Taysom Hill because you paid him way more money than you did Winston. And obviously you saw something in him. I didn't think he was going to play as well as he did. He played a lot better than my expectations, but you're right. I think now you got the tape on him. You know what he's comfortable with. You know what he likes. He's better prove that he can throw that ball down the field. To go along with those legs of his making those plays. But he's part of that new quarterback, that Kyler Murray, that Lamar Jackson, that running, like you said, Tim Tebow, except he can throw a little bit better. But I applaud Sean Payton because a lot of people were second-guessing him. But he stuck to his guns, and obviously he showed he was right. But I can't wait to see what happens from here on out. Taysom Hill, the tape's out. Now let's see how you follow it up.
He threw the ball better than I thought. I'm watching some highlights here. He actually threw the ball better than I thought. He did. I'll give him credit.
Yeah, and they dropped some balls, too.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, you could tell the balls that they did drop, those balls were coming in hot.
Yeah.
A little mustard on that because they're used to probably Drew Brees throwing that ball with all that touch. I mean, he's probably one of the greatest touch passers in the history of the NFL. And now you got this rocket cannon arm. A guy's going to have to make that adjustment. But he threw the ball really well. It was impressive, man. He did way better than I think anybody expected.
Yeah. The Hall of Famer, Tony Gonzalez, Fox Sports. Good talking to you, bud, on a Monday.
Yeah, take care, bud. I'm good.
Taysom Hill was better than I thought. He was. He's Tebow, but if you look at the physical, he's faster than Tebow. So Tebow was always like a 4.75 guy. Tebow's a good athlete, but he wasn't a great athlete. Michael Vick was a great athlete. So Taysom Hill's a great athlete. He's fast, and he throws a better ball than Tebow. So when people used to fall in love with Tebow, my takeaway was always like, well, what does he do great? He's not a burner. He's not. He's like a tight end that runs. He doesn't run as well as Travis Kelce. He wouldn't even be a fast tight end. And that's not a knock on Tebow. He's a great college quarterback. But the NFL, you're asked to make harder throws downfield, and Taysom Hill made him yesterday. It's like, all right. He's better than I thought. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news. This is the Herdline News.
Well, sad, sad news, Colin. Joe Burrow's incredible rookie season is over. He got an MRI today, which revealed more damage than was originally expected. He reportedly tore his ACL, MCL, and suffered other structural damage in his knee.
That's awful.
So his season is over. It is awful. I mean, obviously it's awful when anyone gets injured, but, you know, I love Joe Burrow coming in to the draft. Obviously had an incredible season last year with LSU, and he showed almost immediately that not only was he the future of this franchise and clearly a franchise quarterback, but he is one of those special players that he could actually elevate a team all on his own. Now, obviously, as this injury has shown, he needs pieces and help around him, as does everyone, but he has that extra special something that he doesn't need everything to be perfect. He's a playmaker and he's a winner, and he won over the locker room and the franchise and fans right away. He's clearly a leader. It's just really sad. You never want to see a guy's season go down like this. And you know, he's leading and rookie of the year, and it's just devastating. It's sad, and you know, I don't know how this changes and turns around for him next year either. You know, he tweeted that, you know, he can't get rid of him that quickly, and you know, thanks to Love, he's gonna be back next year. See you next year. But he was sacked 32 times and hit 77 times this season. Both are third most in the league behind Carson Wentz and Russell Wilson. Carson Wentz has had his share of injury situations, and Russell Wilson, like, we know what he's dealing with there. They're just kind of in a little bit of different situations. But the Bengals are graded 26th in pass blocking and 12th in run blocking this season, according to Pro Football Focus. I just don't know how dramatically that changes next season. Like, if you're Joe Burrow, after you recover from this, which obviously he will, how are you looking at the franchise and what they're going to do moving forward?
Well, here's the good news. Drew Brees, John Stockton, Tom Brady, and Michael Jordan all had really bad injuries to their legs, or what, three of them to their legs, Drew Brees to his shoulder. So we have a history of guys having really ugly injuries early, getting rehabbed and returning and having and being better than ever. So, you know, Jordan missed a year, broke a leg or a foot. And so this stuff happens. The difference is I just don't know if I trust the Bengals, and I have every reason to be cynical because I've watched football for the last 40 years.
Oh, yeah, that's totally what I mean. I mean, I think he's going to come back the same, if not better. I mean, guys have injuries. The NFL, you're going to have injuries. It may end up being a blessing that he had this type of injury earlier in his career as opposed to later. But to your point, what are the Bengals going to do to improve the situation for next year? We don't want to see another Andrew Luck type of career situation. They have to make some dramatic changes. Not only does he deserve that, but I mean, the organization, the fans deserve that. Like, you went all in and got the guy. You have the quarterback now, so make the moves, be aggressive in the offseason to put pieces around him to protect him and make sure that he can be successful there. Otherwise, if I'm Joe Burrow, I'm going to start having conversations very early in my career about getting out of there.
Yep.
So the Cowboys finally snapped their four-game losing streak with a 31-28 upset over the Vikings. Zeke Elliott led the way with his first 100 rushing yard game this season, and Andy Dalton threw for 203 yards and three touchdowns in his return. He was all fired up on the sidelines. The Cowboys are now tied with the Giants and Washington at 3-7. Behind the first place Eagles. So the NFC East is Eagles at 3-6-1. The Giants at 3-7, Cowboys at 3-7, and Washington at 3-7.
If you took an all-star team from that division, I would argue it couldn't beat the Chiefs. I'm serious. That there's a couple of defensive linemen for the Washington. You could have a good defensive line, a great defensive line. That organization, Joy, is just four dysfunctional families. Now even the Giants coaches are fighting.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely put together a solid defense.
Yes,
I think, with
Fletcher Cox.
Yeah,
Dexter Lawrence, Fletcher Cox, Chase Young, Ryan Kerrigan.
I mean, even some wide receivers as well. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking at the quarterbacks in this division, you're looking at the offensive lines in this division, the running games in this division. Especially now, you know, the Giants are really Giants and the Cowboys. Zeke's not been running the same, and you know, Saquon Barkley is out for the season. But if you look at the rest of their schedules, their remaining schedules, the Eagles have the worst. They have Seattle, Green Bay, New Orleans, Arizona, Dallas, and Washington.
They're not going to go to the playoffs.
Their next four games are absolutely brutal. Giants is a bit lighter. Cincinnati, Seattle, Arizona, Cleveland, Baltimore, and Dallas.
I like their you could go five. I think they could beat. They'll beat Cincinnati, Arizona at home, Cleveland. The way Baltimore's playing in Dallas, I think the Giants could win 1, 2, 3. They could go 4-2. They could become a 7-9 football team. Absolutely.
I think Washington might have the easiest remaining schedule, but I just don't trust with anything that's going on in Washington because they have Dallas, then Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Seattle, Carolina, and Philly to finish out the season. This is not a great division, and it's going to be a one and done in the playoffs for whoever does win it, but it's going to come down to the last week likely for this division. So finally, we are here in Los Angeles, and the Lakers have been very busy in free agency and made some big moves this weekend. They signed reigning Sixth Man of the Year Montrezl Harrell to a 2-year deal. They brought in Wesley Matthews on a 1-year deal, and Marc Gasol has reportedly agreed to a 2-year deal as well. They also re-signed Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Obviously, they traded for Dennis Schroeder last week. They did lose Rajon Rondo and Dwight Howard in free agency and traded Danny Green and JaVale McGee, but have clearly re-upped their roster. And Markieff Morris tweeted today that he is also returning to the Lakers. He tweeted, run it back, hashtag Lake Show. The rich get richer. I like the aggression. I like all of these moves, actually, and especially the Montrezl Harrell move. Is just my favorites, obviously, are Montrezl Harrell and Dennis Schroeder, but a lot of good pieces that they added to a championship team.
Well, it's the deepest team I think LeBron's had in terms of, you know, the two things we complained about last year with the Lakers is they felt old, so they got younger.
Yes.
And the second thing was, do they have a third scorer? Well, now, Schroeder and Montrezl Harrell, you got a score off the bench and a third scorer. So they solved their – because they did feel creaky at times last year. They felt old. Rondo and Danny Green now, they're both gone. So now I've got Kuzma's pretty young. KCP's in his athletic prime. Montrezl Harrell is young. I would say Schroeder's in his athletic prime. So I got four really athletic guys with a lot of fresh legs. I feel like this morning it is a deep, and LeBron doesn't love young players, Joy, but it's like, right, it's a really nice mix of young athletic guys and smart veteran guys.
Well, he doesn't like young, inexperienced players that haven't figured out the league yet. You know, these are young players, but they know how to be role players. They know how to contribute without, you know, the egotistical problems. They know how to be coached. And one other thing that I like about the moves that they made is one thing that we liked about the Clippers, other than just their depth, was that their toughness and physicality. Well, you added Montrezl Harrell, you added Marc Gasol, and you have Wesley Matthews. Like, these are great moves that add a lot of muscle to your team as well. So I love what the Lakers are doing.
Yeah, great weekend for them. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
Sometimes
news.
In sports, you'll see teams. Rams did this a couple years ago. They start adding pieces, and you're like, how do they afford all this stuff? It's Rob Pelinka managing the cap. Nice job. Tip of the cap. Three-word game on Best for Last to close out Monday.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Casper.com, code Herd. Life-changing sleep. I sleep only on a Casper mattress. And well, I might add, it was another melatonin night. 3 milligrams, couple times a week. God, it's the best. Full of energy. All right, best for last. We call it the three-word game. I believe you can succinctly describe every NFL game in three words when pressed, and here we go. Philadelphia, Cleveland, where's the sun? Three straight games at First Energy Stadium with weather issues, but the Browns are 7-3 through 10 games. That's the best in 26 years. Nick Chubb has missed several games, but it's his fourth with 100-plus rushing yards. And when he runs, and runs well, and he did, big run in the second half, they win. Detroit, Carolina. Detroit, Mock City. First shutout in the Matthew Stafford era. He was sacked 5 times against a rebuilding franchise where most of their talent is on the offensive side. Bengals, Washington, Burrow deserves better. most completions and pass attempts in the NFL. Not as a rookie, as a quarterback. 13 TDs, 5 picks, with a bottom 5 offensive line. Adam Schefter tweeted, tore his ACL, his MCL, worse than expected. Tennessee, Baltimore. Hail the King. King Derrick Henry. 133 rushing yards. He not only leads the NFL in rushing yards, he leads in yards attempt. There's no reason to hold off on him. Attempts and yards, he's the king of the NFL. Atlanta, New Orleans, 6-0. That's the Saints' record last 2 years. Teddy Bridgewater, 5-0. Taysom Hill, 1-0 when Breeze is out. The Saints have a 7-game winning streak. It's the longest active streak in the NFC. They just hammered Atlanta. They've hammered the Bucs twice. And Taysom Hill doesn't make a ton of mistakes. Helps the defense, and that's why they chose him. Pittsburgh, Jacksonville. Big versus Mac. Mike Tomlin said, this isn't a Big Ten versus Mac game. Yeah, it is. Here's what's remarkable. In the storied history of the Steelers, I find this remarkable. This is the first time they've been 10-0. I can't believe that. I grew up with unbelievable Steeler teams in the mid-70s. For the record, Chase Claypool, rookie receiver, in the Super Bowl era, first receiver to score 10-plus touchdowns in his first 10 games. Patriots, Texans, all on Deshaun. First win for Houston against the non-Jaguar opponent, Deshaun Jackson, or Watson, excuse me. Watch. Are we going to show the run into the end zone? Good God, did he take a shot. 28 of 37, 122 passer rating. The ultimate life preserver. Is this it? Oh, what? That is just, oh my Lord. Deshaun Watson was on his game. Jets, Chargers. Haircut didn't hurt. Justin Herbert had 277 passing yards in the first half alone. A career high 366 passing yards. He is the first rookie quarterback ever. This is something. With 2+ touchdown passes in each of his first 7 games. He is really special. Dolphins, Broncos. Tough for Tua. Listen, 11 for 20, 83 passing yards, sacked 6 times. They went 3 and out 5 times in 8 drives. And I do believe with Tua, he doesn't have the arm of Herbert. He doesn't move around like a Burrow or a Josh Allen. There's a way for Tua to win in this league, and that is get great defense. He didn't get it as well. Played from behind, high altitude, cold weather. Probably the coldest game he's ever played in. Not good for Tua. Cowboys, Vikings. Shock of day. First time the Cowboys have scored 20-plus points in a game since Dak Prescott left. They pounded the football. 180 rushing yards. And I thought they were clever. Andy Dalton played well. CeeDee Lamb played well. I thought Dallas came in with a little bit of an offensive identity. We're going to run the football. And I thought in the red zone, some really clever play calling. So, I mean, the team has fight. They look prepared. Minnesota's defense isn't what it has been the previous 3 years, but nice performance. Packers, Colts, packed it in. Green Bay dominates the first half and scored just 3 points in the second half in overtime. That was a key fourth down that Aaron Rodgers missed on. Little more hurried in the second half. Colts had a 14-play drive, a 10-play drive, and an 8-play drive. And I won't blame Aaron for this. He just sat on the bench and watched most of the second half. At some point, quarterbacking is about rhythm and timing. There's no way in the world. And by the way, after that 14-play drive, he was 3 and out. After the 10-play drive, he was 3 and out. They just never saw the ball in the third quarter. And by the time the fourth came around, they'd lost all momentum. Finally, Kansas City and Las Vegas. Too much time. Chiefs got the ball back. trailed by a field goal with a 1:43 left in the fourth. Mahomes drove 75 yards on 7 plays. Mahomes accounted for all 75 yards. That's what he does in one of the most entertaining and well-played quarterback games of the entire NFL season. Three-word game. Tonight, Buccaneers, I'll take them by a touchdown at home over the LA Rams, missing Pro Bowl left tackle Andrew Whitworth. RecTech is more than a grill. It's a lifestyle. Smart grill technology. Turn your grill on and off via your phone. You can get your cook on from your phone. RecTeq.com. We'll be back in the radio studio tomorrow. Thanks so much for joining us. For Joy and John 2 in LA, it's The Herd.